This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want and reliability you can count on. So you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances. So much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. Well, we don't. This has been a weird week for comics. There actually were not a crazy amount of comics that came out, but we're going to talk about some great ones.
I think maybe it's a perfect amount.
Perfect about. You're happy with this, Stack. Why don't we get into it? There are some big ones anyway. Kicking off with The Fury of Firestorm, number one from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Rafael De La Torre. This is part of the Next Level initiative, so we're getting a brand new creator forward take on Firestorm. You don't really need to know much to jump into this, but we're getting much more of like a small town horror take is the way I'd put it. There's a mystery around what's going on with Firestorm. Ronnie Raymond, ostensibly, as far as anybody knows, comes into a small town and starts going nuts on it. It's a little bit like some of the stuff I think we've seen from Captain Atom recently, more than Firestorm, I would say. Sure. But that all said, without getting too deep into it, and I will give a spoiler warning for everything we're talking about in the stack today. Yeah. What'd you think about this book, Pete?
Well, I agree with you. And the writer and artist on this is fantastic. So it's a great package. It's a great team. The problem I run into is Firestorm is not my guy. You know, he's like, I'm like, with the two becoming one thing. And I don't know, man. It gets a little weird for me. So... I do think it's a interesting idea, great first issue, but it's hard to get behind it if it's just not your jam, you know what I mean?
No, I hear what you're saying. I think I would actually take the opposite take. I've certainly liked a lot of stuff for Firestorm, but I do think, particularly if you don't like Firestorm, maybe this is a good one to pick up because he's sort of the bad guy here. He's going a little nuts doing these experiments, as I said. I was really impressed by Rafael De La Torre's art. This feels like very big, very cinematic.
But it's got creepy vibe to it.
Jeff Lemire, love everything that he does. This does feel similar to a lot of stuff that he's done on like Black Hammer and other things. It's a little more in that realm than the DC stuff. There's a little bit of the storybook feel going on here. So definitely feels within his realm. But I dug this. I like the horror take. I'm interested in the mysteries. There's a cool reveal of another character in here that is deeply tied to Firestorm history that, to be honest, I don't really know much about. But I'm intrigued to find out more about her. So I liked it. I thought it was a good time.
Nice.
Oh, great. All right. Well, thank you for being accommodating of my good time, Pete. I appreciate it.
I'm not trying to yuck your yum, man.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. Well, let's see if you yuck my here. Web of Venom, number one for Marvel, written by Jordan Morris, art by Luke Ross and Ramon Rosanas. Now, I should mention, we didn't have a live show this week because I'm traveling. If you're listening to the podcast, maybe this audio is terrible. I don't know. I'm in a random Airbnb in the middle of Massachusetts. But Justin is traveling as well, so Pete thankfully hopped on for this. The reason I mention this is we had Jordan Morris on for our quote-unquote live show where we talked about Web of Venom, so you can listen to that podcast that's in the feed now. And I should also mention, if you want ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. A little bit of a pluggy
there.
Now,
can we get to the comic, please?
Oh, sorry. The thing we talked to Jordan about, though, was that they had this idea for a suit, right? That was like, oh, what if it was a Venom, but he looked like Spider-Man? That's basically the idea. It premiered in an issue of Venom where Venom was trying to pretend to be Spider-Man. Then Jordan wrote sort of like a what if style Elseworlds story about a guy named Eddie Parker who had a Venom suit like this that was Pete. This is an entirely different guy. There's a little bit of a mystery there that they've kept secret so far, but it is a character you know from Spider-Man lore. You find out very quickly in the issue who it is. It's not a dragged-out mystery. But we find that out. This character goes on an adventure. Some stuff happens with him. I thought this was a lot of fun. What about you, Pete?
100% agree. Yeah, I did think this was a blast. Funny bits. I laughed out loud. The Venom rings. That's right. True believer, keep reading. I thought that was a really funny bit. I like the vibe of it. The kind of the whole kind of joke of like, what if we just did this is great in this kind of web of idea. Well executed. It kind of reminds me of what we're doing over in the Absolute thing where we're just beefing people up and having some fun. You know what I mean? What if we beefed it, though? You know what I mean?
Yeah, how hard can you beef it, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly. How can you turn it to 11? Like, what happens? You know
what I mean? After 11 on the dial, I believe, is beef if you go high enough. I feel a little conflicted about the character they choose here because I like the place he has in the universe, but I think for what it is, Jordan did a fun job of channeling the voice of this character. I'm jumping around because it is something they want to keep a surprise, but there is a really fun bit at the beginning here where the character's like, boy, how did I get here? And the Venom suit is like, you don't have time to reminisce. And he's like, no, I got to reminisce real quick. And we get a flashback, and then he flashes back from the Venom suit's perspective as well. The Venom suit's like, why? I know that. Why are you? So a lot of fun jokes, but also some like really cool action towards the end of the issue as well. So here's hoping there's more. This definitely leaves it open for more. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
again, it's a double enjoy for me so far.
Nice.
And let's see if it makes a hat trick of enjoying with Neighborhood Watch, number one for Boob Studios, written by Sarah Galley, art by Hanning. This is focusing on two different communities. One is like a very crunchy co-op community. The other is a high-end gated community style place. We are watching both of them simultaneously go through their days until there's a disappearance in both communities that leads to a surprising twist by the end. I thought this was great, making it the enjoyment hat trick. This was actually, I think, my favorite issue of the week. I loved how this turned out. I like cackled a little bit when there's the eventual reveal that happens about three quarters of the way through the issue. I just thought it was so well done. Sarah Galley just writes some great stuff. I really liked Hanning's art here. Presents these two different worlds, presents a cool mystery. I'm on board. I'm looking to watch what happens with Neighborhood Watch.
Yeah, there's a lot of watching going on, so it really lives up to the title, which is nice. I love the art.
And neighborhoods. There's two neighborhoods, so they should actually call it Two Neighborhood Watch.
Oh, you're right, yeah. Well, you don't want to hit it with the two too early, you know what I mean? You got to be like Neighborhood Watch 2, the next version, so yeah. But I also really thought the art vibe was really smart. Like, they use just the panels, which normally might be white or black. They kind of set these characters with different colors, and it matched them. So when we were switching back and forth, it really kind of kept it in this kind of vibe for the character, which I thought was super smart. We kind of got this creepy, cultish town type thing going on. But, I'm a little scared, but horror is not my bag. But I'm enjoying this so far, nervously.
Yeah. I definitely say pick this up if you're looking for a good new mystery series with, like Pete was saying, some great art. Let's move it on back to the old Marvel with Uncanny X-Men number 26, written by Gail Simone, out by Luciano Vecchio. So they've been teasing in the solicits that a big secret for Uncanny X-Men, something about why the team got together that they've been teasing since the beginning. I don't think they reveal it here. I was looking forward to it. Like, what? Well, they don't reveal that, like, ooh, here's the secret about how the team got together.
I thought the last panel was the reveal.
There's a big reveal that happens in the last panel, and right. This is just me saying, like, off the solicit, I was definitely plugging it as, like, there's, if I remember correctly, Excalibur number 50 is this thing where they're like, surprise, this is why the team got together in the first place, right, all the way back in issue number 1, which you didn't know, redefining everything. I thought that's what we're going to get, and we may still get there. We don't get it in this issue, but what we do get is, like, some great character setup, just, like, nice character moments at the beginning half of the issue, and then a total swerve halfway through that I thought was so fascinatingly done, and I was just like on the edge of my seat wanting to know what's going on. And that's a good place to be with an X-Men comic, I think. What about you, Pete?
I agree, but I also think the last panel like got me really pumped for that and what's to come with that. So, and they did a great job of giving us kind of individual moments with those people. So very exciting. I thought this was a really solid issue. Great art. Nightcrawler making out in his underwear. I mean, come on. You know, I still, you know, like Wolverine and Beast hanging out. Like, I still don't trust Beast, but it's nice to see them maybe trying to get on a better page. So, like, you know, there was some tea being, like, had in this issue, and, like, I was there for it.
Yeah. This is really good. This is also maybe a good jumping on point just because it resets and re-explains everybody in this title, the place that they're at. It's coming off of my favorite arc from the title so far. But I've been seeing a lot of people jumping ship from the X-Men line. Like, that's become a thing that I've seen. They've been talking about in our Comic Book Club Discord. We've certainly had our issues with some of the titles. There's a lot that I like, but, like, this is only getting stronger, I think, this title. So
yeah, but I mean, a lot of people upset about Waffles. You know what I mean?
Waffles?
Yeah, you know, the robot dog Waffles, who only job was to guard the kids. Yes.
I thought you meant like pancake fans were up in arms.
No, I'm not switching to food, although I have been known to do that. But I'm just saying that, like, Waffles has one job, and it's to guard the kids. And it was like sleeping on the job, and it's like, yo, you're a robot, bro. Like, what are you doing? And
why are you sleeping? You don't need to sleep.
Yeah, like, what
don't
the fuck,
don't even sleep,
man?
Bro.
You're a robot watchdog, and, like, come on, man.
What are you doing, man? Come on.
You're really blowing it, bro.
Waffles. Come on. Absolute Green Lantern number 13 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Eleonora Carlini. This is a wild issue, as usual, where some wild, weird stuff happens. We're focusing a little bit more on the space side of Green Lantern, finding out about wild and weird, finding out more about Sinestro and what he is up to. I feel like we've been a little back and forth about this title. Are you more back or forth on this one, Pete?
Ooh, that's a great question. I guess I'm more forth. Amazing art, tripped out art, our interesting kind of badass lady in this one. Snapping necks, I'm all for that. So yeah, this was great. I thought this was a lot of fun and didn't have a lot of Green Lantern in it, which made me very happy. So yeah, like I
yes,
thought this,
this
was
actually focuses not just on Sinestro, but some other classic characters that have been redefined in a very dark way for the Absolute Universe, which I thought was cool. So
yeah. How about you? Are you fourth?
I think I'm mostly fourth. I actually like the Green Lantern stuff. I like what's going on with Earth with Hal Jordan and Joe Mulan and the rest of the cast that they're building out. So I missed this issue. But I did really like Eleonora Carlini's art. It did feel very psychedelic, which is appropriate for this title. So yes, a little more fourth. A little more, less fourth than you. More back than you, but a little more forth.
Okay, but also really, you know, what I love about the Absolute stuff is they're pushing it art-wise. You know what I mean? They're taking swings, you know, whether it's turning up the beef or whatever. It's fun to see art like this.
Agreed. Amazing Spider-Man, number 26 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Francesco Mata and Ed McGuinness. Building off the big shocking death for the last issue of Death Spiral, where, spoiler if you haven't already read it, they killed off Paul. Everybody's going after Torment, who now has the Carnage suit. Venom, who is Mary Jane, is feeling conflicted. Peter Parker, who is Spider-Man, is feeling conflicted. Eddie Brock is dying. Like, he's almost dead. He's got a lot of the plot is like, can we please take Eddie to the hospital? He's almost dead.
Sure.
I think we, as far as I'm aware, we've been loving this crossover so far. Pete, fourth or back?
I really shouldn't
continue that.
Yeah, that, please, let's stop. First, I want to tip my hat. Joe Kelly is writing something. Whether or not you're, like, upset about the Mary Jane aspect or not, you know, I don't know who I'm catering to there, but I'm just saying that, like, this has been a hell of a ride. Like, this story has been awesome. It's been nonstop. It's been super impressive. And I've just been really enjoying the whole spiral of it all. And this has really kind of turned things up for Spider-Man in a cool way. And it's cool to see these different characters interacting. Like, the Pete and Mary Jane stuff, even though they're, like, coming from different sides of stuff, is still very kind of touching and cool. And, like, you know, when she came out of the suit, I was like, oh, God, you know. So, yeah, this is great. I'm having a great time.
Me too. The storytelling is really impressive here. I love how this story is so focused. I know I mentioned this almost every part, but, like, it's so razor focused on these characters. Torment is a great villain and a really good design for a villain, and is really pushing these characters in interesting directions. I think Justin and I, you were not here for the last stack, right? So Justin and I were talking about how what I think is succeeding about this is it's really dialing in on the emotional journeys of our main three characters. And that's why this is working for me. And that continues in this issue.
Yeah, I just think that, like, just because I wasn't here doesn't mean you should punish the audience. Like, they probably listened to the last act. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
it's
yeah,
not punishing.
Alex, we
it's
know.
Offering we my heard beautiful you. Opinions.
Yeah, also, I liked when, you know, like, Spidey was making some jokes and doing the whole, like, name jam with the garment. I thought that was a real fun moment where I was like, yeah, Spidey, even though when he's down, he's still got some quips, some quality quips. So,
yeah,
Joe Kelly not only can write some interesting story, but also some funny stuff. When people don't get Spider-Man, it's usually the sense of humor for me. And I feel like he does a great job of getting that tone for Spidey.
For sure. Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater presents Romeo and Juliet and Godzilla, number one from IDW, written by Adam Tierney and Tom Scioli, art by Sean Peacock and Tom Scioli. This is a kind of follow-up to Tom Scioli's Godzilla Meets the Great Gatsby, which is one of my favorite titles of the past couple of years. I had an absolute blast reading that. This one, as you can imagine, tells the story of Romeo and Juliet, but Godzilla and Mothra and other monsters happen to be there at the same time. And then we get the first of a two-part backup from Tom Scioli, where it is Godzilla meets Robin Hood and his merry men that is going to continue in, I don't know if this was announced yet, but Godzilla versus the Odyssey. Ooh. Is going to be coming, which sounds like a lot of fun. You seem to be psyched. I know you're always psyched about Godzilla, but what do you think about this, Pete?
This is just so fun. They're doing such a great job with this. You know, I love Godzilla. I think they're doing such a fun job of mixing this in a way where I really felt like, you know, it's too bad JT Sis here. He's a classically trained actor, knows Romeo and Juliet back and forth, I'm sure. But I really felt the Romeo and Juliet love story in this. Like, and the use of Godzilla was such a fun kind of heightening of already their story in such a cool way. And the Mothra stuff was really good. That team up, the Mothra and Godzilla team up, was touching. And we get kind of like the first part of the Robin Hood story. So excited for that. But the art, the tone of it, the kind of almost lighter colors has a lightness to it that is really cool. Even though there's, you know, people dying, all this kind of stuff going on around them, you know, running for their lives, Godzilla. But man, what a great package. And they really get the fun of this by also really bringing character in such a cool way. So, yeah, super impressive.
I was a little worried because I love the previous book so much that this wouldn't quite match up. And to be honest, like, I still like the other one better. I think it just really dove down on the themes of Great Gatsby. This is a little more, it reminded me a lot, and this is a compliment, of Godzilla versus Bambi. Have you ever seen that?
Sure,
like that very
yeah.
old short, yeah. Where it's Romeo and Juliet is going, and every once in a while somebody gets stepped on, which is funny. Like, it's a funny joke, and visually it completely works, but it didn't quite hit the parallels all the time. It was more like Romeo and Juliet is running, and then every once in a while, there's some monster attacks. And they do kind of a nice job of paralleling it with Godzilla and Mothra, but I wish they did it. I wish they did it like a little harder. I don't know. I felt like there's some jokes left on the table. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Leave no jokes on the table, I say.
I thought it was a great comparison of the two, and I thought it lined up nicely.
I'm so glad they're doing this. Like, regardless of my feelings on it, it is great that IDW is doing it. It's fun. Let's have more weird comics.
Yes.
Bleeding Hearts, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Dennis Camp, art by Stephen Morian. This title takes place in a world where zombies have taken over, and they have a form of intelligence. There is a zombie whose heart has started beating. He has discovered a mom and her kid who are on the run, a human mom and kid, and is keeping them hidden. This issue, the zombies find out about it and come after them. How are you feeling about this book? And this is, by the way, this is a DC Vertigo. I didn't say that the right way.
Okay, well, first off, crazy cool cover. If you like horror, it has that, like, oh shit vibe to it, that kind of cover, which is great. Yeah, I really love the art style of this. It's creepy. It's amazing. The page layouts are really impressive with the shading and the mood. It's gross, but it's also, there's a cuteness to it. It's a whole thing. It scares the shit out of me, but, you know... I still can kind of, I'm kind of looking at through my fingers. I'm reading it, but it's still good.
I really like this as well. Somebody on our Discord, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting exactly who posted this, compared the art to the late, great Sam Keith, which I think is a really good comparison I hadn't thought about before. So gorgeous art, always in the camp in terms of story. I do wish this was moving a little faster. Like, after the first issue, which was so packed with details and world building, it feels like one thing happens each issue now, which, mind you, we're only 3 issues in, so this is, like, a very minor quibble. Yeah. But I want, I don't know, I got, like, this rush for the first issue of, oh, man, we're diving into this world. There's so many things to dig into. And then the second issue was, like, one very simple thing happens. And the third issue was, like, one very simple thing happens. So that's all. Just want to get more meat on the bone there, but artistically it's all meat, baby.
Yeah, well, I'm on the other side of that camp, my friend. I'm like, oh god, I hope nothing else happens. Like, please stop. Interesting.
There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you, to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork, refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer, or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in, all with the style you want and reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG Appliances. So much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
Iron Man number 4 from Marvel, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Carmen Carnero and Jen Basil Dua. Tony Stark has been captured by Madame Mask, who wants him to build her a weapon or die. Classic. One of the two, maybe both at the same time. Meanwhile, she's captured a bunch of people, trying to force them to be the next Tony Stark and invent something, basically, or die, similar to the situation where Tony invented the Iron Man armor. And there's a bunch of other things going on here, but man, this is one where we are moving so quickly through the story. Joshua Williamson, I think, is absolutely crushing it in terms of Tony Stark's character, in terms of invention. This feels fresh and new and dangerous for our character and all of our characters. Love where this is going.
Yeah, this is really intense, man, but great. Tons of twists and turns. The action is great. I really think the pace of this is just kind of breakneck in a great way. But yeah, she's trying to Tony Stark Tony Stark while also trying to Tony Stark maybe the next Tony Stark. So, you know, she's really doubling down on this idea, which...
Well, there's the fixer who's like, I could Tony Stark and be Tony Stark, and he can't. Like,
yeah,
he can't,
because it's like, hey, you know, I thought we settled this in the movie when it was like, you know, Tony Stark did this. You know, I'm not Tony Stark. You can't, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He built this in a cave with scraps.
Yeah.
There you go. Got to put him in a cave. That's what you got to do.
How was the fun V?
Oh, right. Yes, I remember that. Should we keep doing quotes from Iron Man? Iron Man.
Nice one.
That's a good one.
Hey, let's go to Burger King.
Yeah. Oh, these are great quotes. Next time. We could do this all night. All right. Estuary, a ghost story, number 1 from Odie Press, written by David D.B. Andre and Tim Daniel, art by Man House. This is about a woman who discovers underwater ghosts. That's basically it. I mean, that's kind of the pitch for the book. Artistically beautiful. How'd you feel about the story, Pete?
Yeah, artistically beautiful is an understatement. It's unbelievable. Like in the first couple of pages, there's this fiery car crash that's so beautiful in such a kind of epic way. The tones and the colors are really impressive. But if I didn't have to read this for this podcast, I wouldn't have made it past some of these covers are so fucking scary. There was a couple I was like, nope, no, I don't want to keep reading. Please, no, this is unbelievably creepy. So it's people looking creepy. The tone of it is super creepy. The art is unsettling in a good way. I wouldn't if I didn't have to.
Yeah, I was all right with the story. I mean, maybe part of the thing is that I read the description, and this is not what it says, but I was like, ooh, spooky underwater ghost, let's go. And then it's not until, spoiler, the last page that we get an underwater ghost. I'm like, we kind of had that a little earlier. There's a lot of talk about her being like, I don't know about God and the existence of God for a lot of the book, that I'm like, I could walk into a church anywhere and get this potentially.
Yeah, but you know, you want to know where somebody stands when they see a ghost. You know what I mean?
I guess. I feel like I have a good sense of where most people stand. I know where you stand for sure, Pete.
Oh, thanks, man.
You stand jumping up in the air, your legs going, and then you leave a hole shaped like you in the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So that's
run
actually
to,
not
run
none of that
live,
is standing.
None run of that to is live. Standing.
Yeah. Emperor Aquaman, number 16 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by John Timms. Now, we haven't totally been following Aquaman very consistently, but last issue was the kickoff of a new arc where Aquaman is trying to be Emperor of the Seas all over the galaxy with his new amped up powers. And I think we were like 50-50 on the last issue, so I figured it was worth checking in on this one. Here, we're getting him going to a new location, going to one of these seas that he's trying to create a beacon in so they can all be connected. And there's some twists and turns there. What do you think, Pete? Is this a title we should keep following after this issue?
Well, I'll tell you what. On the cover, there was like Aquaman breaking the fourth wall, and I was like, "What is happening here? This is not.
Well, this is not Deadpool.
Yeah,
this
like
is not what Lobo.
What are you doing? What are we Aquaman? Doing that? No thanks on that. But all that aside, like cool, interesting story. You know, we got some creepy ant people. You can't trust it. You know what I mean? But then the kind of reveal at the end that's like, of course. You know, it's just a matter of time before we get the Black Manta villain reveal. You know, it is an Aquaman book. So, yeah, I mean, I saw it coming and I'm still having a good time.
I like this better than the last issue. I think Aquaman has gotten way overly complicated with the Dark Tide arc and him going to the Seven Seas, the magic and whatever. If it can simplify down to this, almost like an episodic or, you know, issue-based, to throw it out there with comic terminology, heading to a new location and he encounters a challenge and it's part of the overall thrust of what's going on here, a plan by Black Manta, that's cool. I'm into that because this was very creepy, the thing that happens here. It was very fun. It felt a little bit like what Ryan North is doing over on Fantastic Four to me in an interesting way. But yeah, fun action, and he's got a Shark Squad backing him up, so why not?
Come on, Shark Squad? That's
come
fun.
Come on. Side, Dimensional Squad. Rivals, number 4 from Marvel by Peach Momoko, Jim Bufood, Giuseppe Camuncoli, and Phil Noto. This is focusing on Peach Momoko's alternate version of Psylocke, who comes from Ronin-era Japan. I believe she is on a quest for the Infinity Stones sent by Galacta, and as she tumbles through the multiverse, every time she enters up in a new multiverse, that section is written and drawn by a new artist, artist-writer in this case. I think you and I in particular have absolutely been loving this title. I will say I continue to love it this issue. Like, this is legitimately one of my favorite books we have been reading month to month. I'm very surprised because usually Peach Momoko's stories get a little obtuse at a certain point is probably the way to put it, even though the art continues to be gorgeous. But man, this is so much fun. Every world we visit is great, beautifully drawn. I love it. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, I agree. It is a great, it's a fun art jam. It's a great kind of use of ideas and artists. The first story is kind of has this like 80s vibe to it, which is really fun. It's cute but edgy and tripped out. The donut dragon was fucking fantastic. Yeah, and then the Peach Momoko stuff is just, obviously that's what you're here for, and it's got such a calming, like, I look forward to this in the stack. I agree with you. It's a nice kind of like, this is just cool. The colors make me happy. It's a nice kind of to break up the stack. I'm glad that it's there and comes out.
Well, and this is going to come off ruder than I mean it, but there's been a lot of discussion online about like Marvel versus DC. There always is going to be. But one of the things that I think we've bounced around a little bit is DC has really been succeeding with its art forward approach, really making sure the art is as pristine and interesting as the writing. It isn't just all about the plot. It's how it looks. Like, that's how comic books should be. And Marvel has been a little more about like hitting their deadlines, getting the product out, putting comic books out. And that's at least what has felt from our outside perspective. This is something that's art forward and it's really, really working. So I hope this is working well for them. And I hope it's something they think about doing going forward, because obviously it works for Peach Momoko, but I think it could work for other artists as well. So there you go.
Great.
Transformers number 31 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Ludo Lullaby. This is a issue flashing back and showing a little bit of what's been going on with Megatron behind the scenes. We know that he was trapped in thousands of trials before he ended up, if I remember correctly.
It's a lot of trials.
Yeah, before he was captured by Cobra La and recovered there and then escaped. So we're finding out more about him. There's a tease of other things going on. Pete, you are our Transformers lover on the podcast. Does this title roll out? Is it going to make you roll out to the comic book store? I don't know. It took me a second there.
Yeah, definitely. All those things. It's great. I mean, Megatron is getting an upgrade in this issue, so really awesome. You saw Soundwave in the background. Oh, man. You know, just fun. Just great to see that. Amazing art, action. I'm loving my nostalgia bath. Please don't wake me up. This is just a fantastic thing, man. I'm enjoying this.
Can we talk about the reveal in the issue?
Sure.
Sure. How'd you feel about it turning out that Megatron is working for Ultra Megatronus, as I believe the name?
Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, no reaction there?
Well, I just think that, like, you know, Megatron got himself into trouble. He's got to, you know, find a way to get himself out. So he's taking a knee to Megatronus, and I don't think he's trustworthy. If it's one thing I know about Megatron is as soon as you turn around, he's going to stab you in the back and do what he wants. So I think he's just kind of going along to get along. He was trying to fight the system as much as he could with all those trials, but he had to tap out, so...
And I'm not familiar with this character. This is his daddy. Is that what it is? Because he's Megatronus and Megatron.
His space must be daddy? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I've never met the Onus.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I do know. He was a villain in one of the Michael Bay Transformers movies, and I think one of the animated series as well. And I think he's supposed to be the original Decepticon. So I'm a little shocked and appalled that I know more than you do, Pete, but
yeah,
times are changing, I guess.
Way to join the chat, man. Way to be.
The Nice House by the Sea, number 9 from DC Comics, written by James Todd IV, art by Alvaro Martinez.
Look at this cover. Look at it. It's so good.
All these covers are great. And every time I see one of these covers, I'm like, which character is this? I honestly don't know. Because there's a lot of people in this
book. They give you a character breakdown, though.
I know. I can't read all that. That's a lot of text. We have a lot of comics.
Now you're really sounding like me. You don't want to read? Oh my God.
Switched.
Wow.
The Nice House by the Sea is attacking the Nice House by the Lake, but the tide has turned and the Nice House by the Lake is finding out some things about how their world works. Pete, what'd you think about this issue other than the cover?
This is just too gross for me. This is just...
The guy with the multiple arms is working
The Bardi hoarder stuff.
Would you like that, though? Like, if you had to work and you had, like, four arms?
Please stop.
You could be like, you got a little bit of the Sebulba going on.
I don't know what's happening.
Sebulba from The Phantom Menace?
Yeah, sure. The Hard Choices line was super scary. Last two pages are character breakdowns, which are just fun and quick. And I'm like, thank you for putting these in there. It really helps.
Yeah, here's what I got to say about this book. Now, this is pod racing. All right, let's move on. Every issue of this is good, even if there are a little too many characters to hold on to. Even with the guide in the front, I'm still very intrigued where the overall plot is going, and Bueno's art is gorgeous, as always.
Yes.
Really Uncanny X-Men Annual number 1 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone and Mickey Kendall, art by Francesco Martorino. We are getting a little bit of the present, but this is actually showing... a old New Orleans team of mutants that Wolverine was a part of. What'd you think about this, Pete? Double hit of Uncanny X-Men this week.
Yeah, Gail Simone is killing the game. Cool cover. So we get some soccer fun, you know, but then it's Wolverine and Jubilee go clubbing. And luckily Wolverine shows up just in time to save maybe the new member of the team. So... yeah, this is kind of a cool classic idea, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I really like this. I think this continues the trend that I was talking about earlier with Uncanny X-Men. I got a little twinge in my heart at the end of the issue. This is very sweet and sad at the same time. Very poignant in terms of how it ends, which is very sweet. I do have a question about the clubbing thing. Is the implication... mm-hmm. that Wolverine goes out to that club all the time and Jubilee is like, whoa, now I'm at the club? Because that seems a little flip to me. Like, I cannot imagine Wolverine goes clubbing all the time.
Well, Wolverine goes out drinking. We all know that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So maybe usually, he knows the bouncer and, you know, like
but not
maybe.
A club. He doesn't go drinking at like a dance
right, but
club.
Maybe when he goes to his watering hole and drinks with the bouncer. You know what I mean?
Like, is he you like, know, I'm the best there is at what I do and what I do is.
That this is why we were walking over here just so you could do that fucking bit?
No, I just came up with it off the top of my head. But I don't buy it. That's all I'm saying. I don't buy it.
You don't buy it?
No, he goes, he finds the dirtiest, most disgusting bar in New Orleans. He's not like, take me to Bourbon Street. I want to get white girl wasted. That's not Wolverine. That's not happening. Okay?
Yeah, but, you know, he wanted to roll with Tuba Lee and, you know, he
adjusted. Oh, he her?
Yeah, he adjusted like, accordingly. He was like, all right,
check it out. We got to go to Margaritaville.
Hey, we're going to go somewhere you're going to like, kid. Come on.
Yeah, come on. We're going to get one of those yard-long drinks.
You fucking love that. Oots, come on. You love this.
Oh, this is great. All right, I guess we'll see. Maybe that's a new thing for him. He sidles up to a bar. And
I don't think we've ever sounded older.
I don't know. That sounds like a challenge to me, Pete. Something is killing the children, which is not us. We are old men, number 46, from Boom Studios, written by James Todd IV, art by Werther Delanera. This is continuing the arc of another flashback arc as Erica back in the day is fighting some monsters on a snowy mountain. Meanwhile, there's some machinations going back at the House of Slaughter at the same time. Every issue of this is solid, but I do want to say the art felt a little different to me this issue. I don't know exactly what was going on there. I don't want to say that like it was rushed necessarily, but the stuff with Erica fighting and teaming up with her mentor, very cool. Like by the time we got to the end of the issue, I was like, okay, this is what I'm used to. But the first half of the issue, like it felt a little sketchy and quick to me.
The art did feel a little different. First off, cool cover. But yeah, the badass fighting near the edge of the woods was unbelievable.
Erica pulling out a chainsaw? Very cool.
Come on. Dude, that was fucking, I stood up while I was reading the comic. I was so excited. Yeah, let's kill these fucking monsters. Like, let's go. I was hype. But I agree with you about the beginning part, but it ended so well that I didn't care. It's more of this, please. This is awesome.
Sirens, Love Hurts, number 3 for DC Comics, written by Teenie Howard, art by Babs Tarr. This is following Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, Catwoman, as they prepare for Black Canary's wedding to Green Arrow, while a mystery is bubbling in Gotham. At the same time, the villain gets revealed in full this issue and tangles with our heroes and anti-heroes. What'd you think about this one, Pete?
Well, this is just kind of fun, man. The cover sets the vibe for you. If you think that looks great, then you're going to be very happy with the inside. It's got a brightness to it that's cute and cartoony in a good way. So, yeah, I mean, it does such a great job on delivering that, so you know what you're getting. And, yeah, it's enjoyable.
Yeah, the art is the real hero here. That's nothing against Teenie Howard's writing, but it's just so engaging and nice. The Harley and Ivy relationship is really cute in this issue as well, and a little hot as well, I want to say. But, you know, it's really fun.
That's why this is in there, yeah.
Okay. No, I like it. Like, I like this title. I think it's engaging
to
see
this.
You made
that clear.
Okay, Pete. Yeah. All right. You get to be pretty excited about your Transformers. I could like my Sex of the City, but it's with Gotham City book, and we can all just move on.
Okay. Cool. I'm glad you called it out loud. That's nice.
Dork, number 3 from Image Comics. Dork by Brett Bean. We are following a half-dwarf, half-orc called Dork. He is being tracked this issue by a full dwarf who wants to kill him. There's some twists and turns and big, bloody, disgusting fights that happen here.
Man.
Pete, this has to be one of your favorite titles, right?
Well, I do enjoy it. I think it's a great, I love the art vibe. It has a kind of funness to it, a cartoony lightness that I like. And so, you know, I was a little worried about his plan. You know, his plan was just like, I'm going to get beat the fuck up for a while. But yeah, I love the ghost headless chicken and the eyeball shield. So, you know, I'm here for it, man.
Yeah, I like this as well. I think this has been pretty consistent over 3 issues. I do like, not to call back to what I was saying earlier, but the episodic nature of this, where it really is the overall arc, but you are getting done-in-one adventures in every issue that have a very clear focus. The art from Brett Bean, of course, is very funny and fun. There's a little bit more of a serious issue, I felt like. Like, there are some jokes in there, but it's pretty intense in terms of the action and what happens to Dork. Yeah. I would like to know a little bit more about this main character, because I feel like he's just there and stuff is happening to him. And I want to know more about his interior life and his emotion and why he's going on this journey.
We'll get there. I mean, you saw the map in the beginning, which I'm a sucker for. You know, we got a lot to explore, so I'm sure it'll get there.
We'll see. That is it for our very short stack this week.
It's a respectable length. You know what I mean?
It's a respectable length. For those of you who like a longer stack, because we did get comments the last time we had a sub-hour-long stack, we will probably have a much longer one next week. Our resident yapper, Justin, is off this week. Yeah. So don't worry. He'll be back. We'll talk for a while. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork, refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer, or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in, all with the style you want. And reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances. So much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.